good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. Sports360AZ.com on AZ Central Sports on White Mountain Radio. You can follow me on Twitter at Brad Sussmat. Good to be with you. A lot going on my mind in the world of Arizona sports. We are Arizona-centric. As always, plenty of content up on Sports360AZ.com, high school, college, pro. Today, in fact, Jared Cohen from Sports 360 is on his way to Tucson to be at the U of A football practice. We get down to U of A quite a bit. We were there just doing the show live a couple weeks back. So Jared will join us here momentarily. Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider, will join us. National view of Arizona State and the rest of the Pac-12, Heisman frontrunner, this new bowl system, and the playoffs and all that stuff. Michael Fabiano, very popular segment. All you fantasy football guys, we partner with the NFL Network's Michael Fabiano, NFL.com. Not just some schmo at some website, some dude. It's from the NFL Network who is with us. Senior fantasy analyst, Hall of Famer Michael Fabiano answers your questions. That comes up in about 45 minutes. Let's get you caught up. Some of the things on my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino is just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. Who would not want to be at the Honda Resort and Casino on a day like today or into this weekend? You know, you're in the cool pines up in Pine Top, up in the White Mountains. You can get out and do some hiking, some fishing, some whatever it is you want to do in the outdoors, and then head to the Honda Resort and Casino. You can stay there, get a nice room, eat some great food at night, pull on down on the slots, have some fun, and do it all at the Honda Resort and Casino. They've been a part of Sports 360 AZ since day number one, just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. That is the Honda Resort and Casino. Jared Cohen is on the road. He's heading down to Tucson. Rich Rod has not yet named his quarterback. And I said earlier this week, maybe this is the week. Their home opener is next Friday, 9 days away against the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. ASU's home opener is in 8 days away against Weber State. Well, more on ASU in a minute. Let's head out on to where Jared is on his way down to Tucson. What are you going down there to cover today in the way of football? What is it you're going to go search for today in Tucson?
There's some good stories down there of different players that have joined the team and that are looking to kind of burst out onto the scene this year. There's one name that came to mind last year is Scooby Wright, who was a true freshman last year as a linebacker and came in and was the team's leading tackler and really just came out of nowhere. People who followed recruiting knew him pretty well, but didn't know he'd make such an impact so quickly. There's a few guys that, you know, I've just heard through Twitter or with talking to Rich Rod at Media Day of guys that he thinks could be breakout guys this year, and I'm just going to kind of keep my eye on them and see what their story is and try to have that translate to some solid content on the website.
Sports 360's Jared Cohen on the road to Tucson for practice today with the U of A. We cover not just ASU, U of A. Of course, the U of A folks beat me over the head that I go to Camp T for a week. Well, then go to Camp T yourselves. Build your own Camp T. You know, just back off. You mentioned recruiting. Cameron Denson was viewed as one of the top, if not the elite recruit last year. You and I were in Los Angeles at Media Day where Rich Rod talked about him playing some over a corner. What have you heard about him? Is he somebody you're going to be looking for today?
Yeah, he's definitely one of them. I was hoping to catch up with him, was able to have the opportunity to cover him quite a bit while he was in high school, and I'm looking forward to seeing him. It looks like he's still in that defensive back role, and that's where he's going to be. He's also going to be a big player on special teams as well. He's a punt return threat. I'm not sure where he is on the kick return game, but he will be used on special teams often. But it seems like the defensive back position is where he will be to start his career, and whether that remains the case over the course of his career is yet to be seen. But if he is on the field and takes into game action right from the start, in just 9 days, as you mentioned, when they take on UNLV, it will be in the defensive back role.
You cannot come back from Tucson until you have the story on the starting quarterback. So just tell Rich Rod to get through this. What, in seriousness, are you expecting any news on that today? My sense when we were down there a couple weeks ago, about a week out, is when he was going to have an idea.
No, you know, I really wish I had a good feeling about it. I was hoping, you know, you're making the truck down, maybe you'll have the big announcement. You know, I'm kind of hoping that would happen. But there have been some quotes that have been said over the past week or two that have kind of changed the whole notion of him just naming the starter the day of the game, and that's when we find out. One quote in particular was he talked about how the quarterbacks are progressing at the end of last week. I believe it was on Friday or Saturday, and he mentioned the fact that a new Solomon, Jesse Scroggins, and Connor Brewer are the three quarterbacks that know the offense the best. And so that eliminates Randall and whatever other quarterbacks could be in the mix, because if those three know the offense best at this point, it's pretty safe to say that one of those three will probably be the guys. And then it's going to come down to who continues to progress and who continues to improve. And he should be making a decision here, I think, in the next few days. I don't think he's going to want to prolong this any longer than he needs to. And if he knows a guy and has a guy, I think he's just going to take that on.
Well, here's all you do today, okay? And I'll let you go off this. You just walk up to him and say, I drove down here because you're going to name your quarterback today, right? And you just put it on him. Let's stop the guessing game and let's just move on, all right? Be safe. Safe travels. I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
There's Jared Cohen, sports360az.com, on his way to U of A. They open up in 9 days. In terms of ASU, so 8 days away from their opener, We actually bought a table for the kickoff luncheon. Eric, did you know that? Did I tell you that we had a table for the kickoff luncheon for ASU this week?
Yes, I was aware of this. I was.
You're aware of this?
I am. Yeah.
So you're not invited, but you know it's fine. It's not that I don't like you or I don't think you're okay. It's I just don't want you there. There's other things you could be at.
I'm not invited, and I'm not surprised. So it's just, kind of the way it goes.
Wow. But so the kickoff luncheon is this Friday, and then the first game itself. And for the U of A fans, I didn't go to ASU, okay? Let's just be clear on that. U of A has a kickoff luncheon. Be glad to hear what they have to say in terms of buying a table. Be glad to hear it. So that's coming up. I think the biggest story today in sports is not here in our state. There's some things here in the state that are interesting to me, but Monet Davis is pitching tonight. This little 12-year-old girl is the first girl to throw a shutout in the Little League World Series, the sixth to get a hit in a World Series history. She's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Inside Edition did a piece on her. Monet is wowing not just the sports world, but all of us. Inside Edition. So our country is caught up on a global... I mean, a lot of you guys, you want me to talk about the backup left tackle for the Cardinals. It's not happening here. I'll give you some stuff, but I'm not going to go that deep to appeal to just like 2% of all of you. When I'm looking at Monet Davis, is there too much pressure too soon being put on a 12-year-old? Here is Monet on all the exposure she has received in the last week.
It happened so fast. Like last week we were just in regionals, and now we're here going 2-0, so it's kind of crazy, and it's been really intense.
So SI decides to put her on the cover of the magazine. I think it is a cool story, okay? I think it's very cool. I do think that there is, and I saw her interviewed last night, and she's terrific. She has this just personality about her that you don't get. You get the usual sound bites and the usual nonsense. And I think it's just something, it's something nice to not have to watch or hear about LeBron James, Johnny Manziel, the Yankees, the Red Sox, rinse, repeat. Johnny Manziel, LeBron James, Yankees, Red Sox, rinse, repeat. Maybe throw some Peyton Manning in there too for good measure. Like, let's just stretch ourselves a little bit. We actually have a really good story here. She's pitching tonight, guys. She is pitching tonight, this girl who's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And what will Monet Davis's impact on women's sports is being debated. That's crazy. This girl, 5'4" eighth grader who throws a 70 mile per hour fastball, strikes out batter after batter. She's going to be on the national stage tonight. The game's on ESPN. They have up right now, coming up, Monet Mania on the top of the screen. Like, this is the biggest thing in our country going on in sports today, this little girl at the Little League World Series. And I will be watching today. There's no question about it. What impact will be on women's sports? I don't know if this is going to say I'm empowering. I talked to Paula about it earlier this week. I remember when Annika Sorenstam played in a PGA event and Vijay Singh got all in a bunch and didn't play and was all worked up about it. You know, Nancy Lieberman tried being in the NBA. seeing women in sports and it playing a men's game, I have no problem with this. I think it's pretty cool. I think it's pretty cool. So I'm going to be watching that for sure tonight. The people at Forbes magazine came out with the NFL values of teams today. It's always an interesting story because you look immediately, I want to see where did my hometown heroes come in? Of course, I'm in Arizona. I should care about what the Arizona Cardinals are worth. I'm not a fan of the Arizona Cardinals. Sorry to break it to you. I like watching them play because they're the team here. I don't have a team that I root for. I don't care. And if you say, well, you're from San Diego, you must care about the Chargers. No, I don't care. But I did look up in Forbes magazine because they have the financial data of what each NFL team is valued at. The Cardinals, your Cardinals came in 25th out of 32 NFL teams. That may sound low because when I tell you who the number one team is and why they're worth so much, you'll basically gag. The Cardinals are valued at $1 billion. According to Forbes magazine, value of NFL teams that came out today. Here's the numbers behind the numbers. NFL teams valued at $1 billion. The revenue of the Cardinals, according to Forbes in 2013, was $266 million that was brought in. The operating income of the Cardinals in 2013, $43 million. Now, I don't know, if you do the math of revenue that's coming in, $266 minus the 43 of operating income, it's not bad business, right? And if the team's worth $1 billion, I'd say that's not half bad. And I'll give the Cardinals credit. The Patrick Peterson contract, for those of you that live in the 80s, it still will send notes and call me and say that, the Cardinals are cheap. No, they're not. They're not cheap. I'm not going to say they do business the right way, top to bottom. I think they've done some things very well. But obviously, the numbers don't lie. If you're the 25th most valuable franchise, at least you're in the ballpark, right? You're not at 32. You're closer to the bottom than the top. There's some things in Arizona that you're never going to have that teams like in New York will have over you. The number one team on this list that came out today, and this is the part that just makes you sick. The number one team in revenue. Hey, Dallas Cowboy fans, congratulations. You finally win at something. Actually, every year you win at being an underachiever. Every year for the eighth straight year, the Dallas Cowboys, supposedly America's team, number one on Forbes' list of most valuable NFL franchises. Their value is worth $3.2 billion, three times more than the Arizona Cardinals. Last time I checked, Cardinals have been to a Super Bowl more recent than your Dallas Cowboys. Oh, but we're the Cowboys, man. We're the greatest. You know what? Your team blows again this year. Your defense is awful with a capital A. I mean awful. Is Tony Romo even going to be on the field? In 2016, the Cowboys are supposed to play the Cleveland Browns. What are the chances that Tony Romo is quarterbacking against Johnny Manziel? So here you go, Cowboy fans. You want to brag about how great you are? You are great in revenue. Doesn't it feel good for you, Dallas Cowboy fan, to know that your owner for the eighth straight year is worth more, his franchise is worth more than anybody else? Doesn't that feel good? And your team stinks every year. That's the worst. When you see your team that can't get into the postseason or do anything of note, and yet he's making $3.2 billion, how does that feel, Cowboy fan? You know, that's the worst. Sports360AZ.com. Let's take a break here on the other side. AZ Central Sports. We partner with the Arizona Republic, White Mountain Radio. We're on Twitter, too, at Brad Sussmat. On the other side, so the NFL, I've got a lot of NFL on my mind today. I usually go this NFL heavy on the show, but more on the increase in penalties. Has it been as unwatchable for you as it has been for me, these preseason games? Well, you're going to get more of it. Kurt Schilling talked today about smokeless tobacco giving him cancer. You need to hear this story about the former Diamondback. Tiger Woods going to take a break. James Harden saying, I'm the best basketball player alive. Wow. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/Sports360AZ.
Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. Good Wednesday. We partner with the Arizona Republic day in and day out on AZ Central Sports. Appreciate the partnership with AZ Central Sports. We're on White Mountain Radio and we're on Twitter at Brad Sussmat. In about 10 minutes, we'll be joined by ESPN college football insider Brad Edwards, a national view of Arizona State and the rest of the Pac-12, Heisman frontrunners, much more that's on my mind with ESPN's college football insider Brad Edwards, and then Michael Fabiano will be with us. Our weekly Wednesday segment, NFL Network, NFL.com, senior fantasy analyst, that's in about 30 minutes. I have found myself wanting to go out and buy a Brian Hoyer jersey. Brian Hoyer today was chosen over Johnny Manziel for the Cleveland Browns starting quarterback job. Why has Brian Hoyer been chosen over Johnny Manziel in Cleveland? It is a topic of big debate. Here is ESPN analyst Herm Edwards earlier.
When you look at the situation there, and Coach has more information than anyone. He's been in practice every day. He's been in the meetings. We just see what we watch on tape or we watch in the game. And right now, I think Hoyer's the guy that gives him some stability at the quarterback position.
Here is more Herm on Hoyer will be on a very, 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 very short leash.
He'll have an opportunity. There's no doubt. If this offense struggles and Brian Hoyer plays the way he's played in these first two preseason games, it's quick hook. We might not even wait till week three. I mean, because you got to do what's best for the team. Right now, for this football team, you need to have a starting quarterback right now. So the team, the offense, the players know this is our guy. This is who's opening up for us, opening day, bar injury. Hoyer's the guy.
So on the Monday night game, Brian Arakpo said that Manziel's flipping off was hilarious, quote unquote. And then Manziel gets sacked and Arakpo did the money sign of the deal. Boomer Esiason said, Johnny Manziel, you're going to get wrecked, son. I mean, everywhere I turn, there's things about Johnny Manziel. Eric, wouldn't it be fun if Brian Hoyer went out in the opener against Pittsburgh and went like, I don't know, 14 of 21, 200 yards, two touchdowns, and the Browns win?
I can't really see that happening. I think the Browns have won in Pittsburgh like once in the last 95 years or something like that. But one note, Brad, Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network does a really good job when they're insiders. He said that, I guess at A&M, there was no playbook. So Manziel really never needed to study a playbook until he got to Cleveland. And when he got in the huddle, it became clear to the Browns players that Manziel just had difficulty calling a play, and that's how far behind Manziel is to becoming ready to be the starter. I know everyone, including Herm Edwards, thinks that Hoyer's going to be on a really short leash, but there's no guarantee if Manziel does get a shot, it's going to be any different than what we saw in the preseason so far.
No, I mean, both those quarterbacks have blown.
Correct.
It's not like either one you look at and get all excited about. Look, no matter who they put out on the field, there's a reason why CBS is sending Jim Nantz and Phil Sims to do the Browns in Pittsburgh. They're hoping beyond hope that Manziel is on the field. I would say we're 2 weeks away from that game. The over-under on close-up shots on the sidelines of Manziel will be more than Hoyer tight shots during a game. And it's just the way that it is. Everybody's rooting for him, and he's done nothing. That is what I despise most about sports. I despise sports, and I love sports. Sports is what I've done for a living for all these years. It's been terrific to me and my family. There's no question about it. But I've grown really tired of the marketing of somebody who can't play dead. I've grown real tired of guys behind microphones just building up someone and talking about how amazing they are, and then they're on the field and they blow and they're not willing to call them out. Johnny Manziel's done nothing so far. He's sold a lot of jerseys. He's made some NFL guys on the internet lots of money because they keep doing Manziel stuff, feeding the beast. They go back to their bosses and say, look at how many retweets I've got. Oh my gosh, well, we have to keep you. Yeah, he's writing about somebody who can't play. Real problem in journalism nowadays. We're doing stories on guys that can't play. We're doing it just based off of clicks. And that's not good. Give me, Carson Palmer, in my view, I'm sitting here in Arizona, so I'm watching. Carson Palmer, in my view, and if you've listened the last couple of days, I brought it up to Paul, I brought it up to Kent yesterday. He's played well enough, in my opinion, that you have to start looking at his number and where he is at quarterback in Arizona. Fitz is not going to be here next year, in my opinion. I'm getting off a total sidetrack here, but Carson Palmer, there's not going to be any debate nationally about, is Carson Palmer going to be a guy, because he's over in Arizona. Manziel's in stinking Cleveland, and people cannot get enough of him, and he can't play. The only way to get me to change my mind is go out and do something, not just in one game, not in two games, but build up a season. He had done it. He's got Matt Leinart, Jamarcus Russell, Ryan Leaf written all over him, in my opinion. You want to throw Blaine Gabbert and Christian Ponder? They were drafted even ahead of this guy. On the field, the NFL is clamping down on how much contact offenders make with receivers. We've noticed that. If you haven't noticed how unwatchable and how many flags per game, through 33 preseason games, through the first 2 weeks of preseason, NFL officials have called 22.9 penalties per game. Per game!
Yikes.
22 times, stop, blow the whistle, wave the arms, pick up the laundry, converge, go over, look up to the camera, call whatever it is you need to call. 22.9 penalties per game. That's up 44% from last year. 44% at the same point of last year. So the biggest reason for the increase are the so-called points of emphasis given to league officials by the NFL. We see this in training camp. We see this in preseason games. We're going to call stuff really tight. We're going to just really clamp down. Then the regular season comes, and it all goes out the window. Or it goes for the first few weeks, and then it all goes bye-bye. This year's point of emphasis is leaning heavily on contact made by defensive backs. It's always about defensive backs. It's never about wide receivers. So do you want this game to become arena football? Is that what your goal is? To push it as close as you can to have 70 to 59 games. It's great for fantasy football. Again, I'm sitting here as a conspiracy theorist. Let's be honest, the popularity of the NFL starts with gambling. It starts with gambling. It doesn't start with blocking and tackling. I've got Michael Fabiano on in 20 minutes talking all things fantasy football, and I get overrun on that segment by people. And it's great. It's great. That's why we do it. I'm first to admit it, and we've done it for 3 years. Anybody who poo-poos fantasy is not in touch with reality. The days of saying, what are the Cardinals going to do to replace Darnell Dockett? Last for a little bit. Anybody who's in their 20s and 30s, they don't care. They're moving on to give me the 10th best wide receiver in my PPR league. Oh, Cardinals had an injury? I'm not taking that defense. That's where it is. So, of course, the point of emphasis is on defensive backs. Contact beyond the five-yard area. If you're at the 5.5, they're going to throw a flag. Holding of receivers by defensive backs, even within the five-yard contact area. So it's defenders that are being called closest, which tells you what? The NFL wants more scoring. They don't have Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa out there doing their thing in baseball. In football, we're just going to make it impossible for guys. We'll talk about shutdown corners. Richard Sherman versus Patrick Peterson. Well, Patrick Peterson gave up this many touchdowns last year, and Richard Sherman didn't, so he's the best. Guys, these guys can't play the game like it used to be played. You want to watch Madden? That's where it is now. Final score, 50 to 49. So that story is on my mind today. Really like the James Harden story. So I always liked James Harden when he was there at Arizona State. He came in as this highly recruited, but very unassuming. Eric, I have to say, of all the guys that have come through Arizona in college that came out on the backside to turn out to blow up to be really big, James Harden's probably the most unassuming, mild-mannered, backpack on one shoulder with actual books in it, not food and Gatorades, but actual books he studied, that we've seen. Would you agree or not on that one?
Quietly great is the way I would describe him. Quietly great.
Okay, so when James Harden comes out, as he did this last week, and he's on the national team, and they play tonight, and we'll see if Derrick Rose plays, James Harden says that he is better than any other player in the NBA. Bottom line, he's asked, you're on this team and a lot of players aren't, but in your mind, who's the best basketball player alive right now? James Harden says, myself. That's what I was about to say, including you. You made that sound like an easy answer, the interview asks him. Harden said, it is, myself. Harden would go on to talk about things that make him great. Now, if I'm starting a basketball team, do I think James Harden is the best defensive player that I've ever seen? And the answer on that is no. There's moments where I think he's terrific. And people will point to, well, he hasn't won anything yet. But he's very early in his career. If you're building a team, do you start with James Harden? I don't know if I would. I'd come close to looking at James Harden. He's probably in my top five if I'm starting a team. If Derrick Rose had a knee that was good, I'd start with him. I believe you start a franchise with point guards. I really do. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. White Mountain Radio and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat. Let me take a minute here to talk about one of our brand new sponsors. It's always good as we continue to grow and that people see our growth and they say, hey, Brad, I want to be involved with you. That's exactly what happened to me. Columbus Foods came to me in June and said, we see what you're doing. We've seen your growth. We see the college and the high school and the pros and all the local stories that you're doing. You're not just doing what everybody else is doing. You're completely different. And we want to be a part of you. And I said, well, I want to be a part of you. Let me learn more about you. Columbus Products were founded by Italian immigrants in 1917. That's nearly 100 years of experience. Columbus Foods, guys, we've got a Cardinal home game this week, this Sunday night. You're going to be out looking for food. You're going to be out looking, whether it's at the tailgate at the game or at your house. Let me just tell you, Columbus Foods means damn good meat. They're at AJ's. Stop into AJ's. Terrific place. Start with the finest ingredients. That's what they do at Columbus Foods. Columbus starts with the finest ingredients by hand selecting whole cuts of premium meat, using real herbs and spices, extra time and care in slow curing the salami, slow roasting deli meats. Oh my gosh. You can see and taste the difference. They keep it wholesome too. You'll never find artificial flavors and colors in the products. So I'm telling you, for this weekend, NFL games coming up, sports coming up this weekend, or your tailgates, or even next week with the ASU home game, make sure you swing by AJ's and get Columbus Foods, a venerable San Francisco Bay Area institution. Back with more after this timeout. Brad Edwards, ESPN college football analyst. On the other side, I'm Brad Sussmat.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Brad Edwards, ESPN college football insider, joins me. Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat. Always good to have Brad Edwards with us. National view, things going on. Appreciate you coming on the show, Brad. We're just 8 days away from the start of the season here in Arizona with ASU playing Weber State. 9 days away from Rich Rod taking on UNLV. What do you make, first and foremost, of the two teams here in Arizona this year?
I think both of them could have good years. I like ASU's offense and their ability to kind of continue what they've been able to do with Kelly at quarterback. Obviously the big question is going to be defense and how much of a drop off is there with all the losses they had. We had Todd Graham in a few weeks ago, and he seems to be one of those guys that there's some coaches that are never going to say anything negative, never going to plant any seed of doubt. And so he was very optimistic about everything, but I just get the impression, I don't cover him every day like you do, but I get the impression that that's kind of his personality. So I'm not going to make too much out of the fact that he was optimistic about the defense, but that's what he said to me. And then, with Arizona, I think that, and I guess really the same with the ASU. I don't know if you call them dark horse. You probably do just because UCLA is such a heavy favorite. But I think both of them, are teams that are capable, if things break right, of winning the South. I mean, they're certainly not a favorite. I like some of the pieces with Arizona, even though there are some, question marks on offense. The fact that they have experience on the offensive line, I think, is going to be a very big thing for them. And defensively, you know, once again, I guess like ASU, there's a question there because of some of the guys they lost. But they made such a huge improvement from 2 years ago to last year defensively. And I'm really intrigued to see whether they can keep from dropping off too much. Because typically when Rich Rod has it going, if they can play mediocre defense, they should win a good number of games. And so that's kind of the way that I look at them. I think they're two teams that have a chance to, you know, to be in the top 25 this year if things go well.
ESPN College Football Insider Brad Edwards with us. You can catch Brad as part of ESPN College Game Day on ESPN Radio. Does a terrific job. He's come on with us several times through the years and appreciate his time and his insight. Let me bounce around the Pac-12. Is there some pressure on Mark Helfrich this year to win at Oregon? And given that Washington now has Chris Peterson, we know, Brad, the rivalry between those two hasn't been much of a rivalry here in recent years. Oregon's just run all over them. But I'm starting to get a vibe and sense with people up in Eugene that they're not all in on Mark Helfrich.
I don't think there's any question about that. And I think the big thing was last year after the Stanford loss, when you had a couple players come out and say they really didn't care about going to the Rose Bowl, because that was what they were still playing for at that point. And then they kind of validated that by going out and just seeming totally uninspired against Arizona and lost another conference game. And there were a lot of Oregon people at that point said this would have never happened with Chip Kelly. And when people start saying that, okay, obviously, I don't want to go as far as saying he's on the hot seat, but obviously there's some doubts about him as a head coach when you have a lot of people making those comments. And, you know, and then they follow that up by almost losing at home to OSU at the end of the year. And I think they scored like 30 seconds left to win that game. So it could have been even worse. Now, they looked good in the bowl game. So we'll see how they're able to recover. But offensively, and I know they just lost their starting left tackle to injury, but they still, despite, you know, not having proven talent at receiver, they still should be loaded offensively, and scoring shouldn't be an issue. But with Nick Aliotti gone, I wonder, is their defense going to drop off? So there are a lot of things that give you reason to question where Oregon is right now. And I think just because we would assume that this is Marcus Mariota's last year of college football,
right?
There's a lot of reason to think that this might be their last good chance for a while to win that elusive national championship. Because there's no question that the program has gotten to a point where, you know, it's nice to win the Pac-12, but they've done it a few times recently, and their sights are set much higher than that.
Flip down on the South, where ASU and U of A are. I think the window of opportunity, in particular for Arizona State, is now. USC is coming off those scholarship reductions. You would think they're going to be better. You mentioned UCLA off the top. Where do you see this conference? I don't think even just this year, but is USC on the precipice of being back to being that national player?
Yeah, and I think USC is a part of why I think that Oregon needs to strike now. You know, because for the last, I don't know, 4 years, it's been Oregon and Stanford's conference. And really, the Pac-12 championship game has seemed like a foregone conclusion, and I don't think that's going to be the case anymore. And you know, partly because of UCLA's improvement, but I think a lot of it has to do with USC having a chance to get their numbers back. Now, this year, they're still going to be really lacking, but I think moving forward, every year, USC should get better and better. And the jury's still out on Sark. I mean, I think he's a good coach, but is he better than good? You know, that remains to be seen. I mean, he was he did a nice job, you know, getting Washington back on his feet, but he didn't do anything there to lead you to believe that this guy is, you know, a prodigy. But we'll see what he's able to accomplish there. But you know, certainly with the investment that Arizona and ASU have made. With their new coaches and the direction that those programs seem to be going, there aren't going to be a lot of easy wins in that conference, and so I think that's you know, yet another reason to believe that Oregon's window is shrinking. And I think in general, just looking ahead to the college football playoff, last year might be the norm, you know, which is that you have a team with two losses coming out of that conference just because there is so much parity And it's not just parity. I think there's quality. I mean, there are a lot of good teams in that conference. And I personally hope that the committee is going to back up all the talk that they've had about schedule strength and the importance of it, because my belief is if there had been a playoff last year, Stanford should have been in it because their schedule was so much stronger than all those one-loss teams. But that's one of those that we'll have to wait and see whether they actually put two-loss teams in ahead of one-loss teams because they had a stronger schedule.
Talking with ESPN College Football Insider Brad Edwards for a couple of minutes. Really good stuff here. Would you be willing to say Pac-12 is better than SEC or on the same level? What do you think?
We'll have a much better idea midway through the season. Right now, I think they've closed the gap. I'm not sure if they're there yet. But you know, obviously the advantage the Pac-12 has this year is the experience at quarterback that the SEC does not have. Now, the question is always when the SEC is so good on defense, is it a product of great defense or is it a product of, you know, mediocre offense? And you know, that'll be another thing that's kind of difficult to slice through this year as well. But the one thing I can say for the SEC is that whenever these national championship games have come around, those defenses have risen to the occasion and have really been the primary factor in them, you know, winning all these national titles for most of the last decade. So, you know, I think until I see a couple teams in the Pac-12, maybe it's not even fair, a couple, because I think that Stanford has been very good defensively for the last few years, and I think that that Oregon has been very underrated defensively. I think they've had some good defenses, and their numbers are skewed because we look at them in traditional ways, per game type stats, and we don't account for the fact that their tempo causes those numbers to be elevated. But I want to see more quality defense played across the Pac-12 before I buy into them being on the same level as the SEC. But I think they're getting really close.
Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider with Brad Susmadge. You can catch Brad, of course, on ESPN College Game Day on ESPN Radio. He does a great job joining us here for a couple of minutes on Sports 360 AZ, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter. You can follow me at Brad Susmadge. Let's switch over to the Braxton Miller story. You know, Ohio State's in a spot where there's a lot of Buckeye fans here in our audience. JT Verrett, the redshirt freshman, was recruited by Urban Meyer. He's not like Braxton Miller. I'm just curious on the Miller injury. When you look at the Big Ten this year, Ohio State's biggest games are not till November. Verrett has enough time to develop himself, doesn't he? I mean, is this really a death blow to Ohio State?
Yeah, I'm not selling my Ohio State stock yet. And it's really because I think they're still more talented than anyone else in that conference, even without Miller. Now, the fact that the game against Michigan State, as you mentioned, is not until November, that helps because the new quarterback's going to have a chance to you know, gain some experience. And, you know, we always say it in, you know, in November that the freshmen are not really freshmen anymore because they've had enough games under their belts. And, you know, I think it's important for people to know that he was recruited by Urban Meyer. So he's not a holdover. He's not a pocket passer who was recruited by the previous regime. He is a Meyer recruit, and so Urban picked him for this particular scheme. So he's a dual threat guy, and I think that the biggest question, because really Braxton Miller's weakness was that he wasn't that great of a passer. If he can be a better passer than Miller, even though he's not going to be as good of a runner, I think he's a good athlete. Braxton Miller is a running back playing quarterback. I mean, he's a very good runner. So you're not going to be as good as him in that area. But I think if he can be a better passer, then maybe, you know, they won't be a whole lot worse off than they would have been. I think the biggest impact, I guess there are two major impacts from this. One, just specifically for Ohio State, is that they were already replacing four starters in their offensive line. And when you throw an inexperienced quarterback behind an inexperienced offensive line, now all of a sudden the potential for disaster, you know, maybe like a four turnover game, something like that, is increased. And whereas you might have looked at the first 2 months of the season on Ohio State's schedule and said there's no way they lose a game before Michigan State, now you can at least see the possibility that could happen, that unexpected loss. So I think that's number one. The number two big picture thing is really more for the Big Ten, which is that if you assume that Michigan State is now the favorite because of this loss of Braxton Miller, if Michigan State gets rolled in Eugene in week two, I mean, I think it's one thing if they go lose, but they lose competitively. But if they get blown out at Oregon, and a lot of teams do get blown out at Oregon,
right?
And then they go on to win the Big Ten, does that completely eliminate the Big Ten from the college football playoff? Because it would be really tough for a one-loss team with a blowout loss to be able to stand up to other one-loss teams they're being compared to, especially when they don't have very many quality wins on their schedule. And let's be honest, going to the Big Ten is not going to get you very many quality wins.
Yeah, no, that's really good points on that front. I appreciate your time and your insight as always, Brad. Thanks for joining us for a few minutes. Look forward to catching up with you down the road.
All right, my pleasure, Brad.
Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider, for a couple of minutes there. That's a lot to digest. Really good stuff there. On the other side, Michael Fabiano, NFL Network, NFL.com, Senior Fantasy Analyst, weekly segment with Michael. That's on the other side. But first, let me tell you about my friends at Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Recently, my wife and I looked at our 2004 Expedition with over 160,000 miles rolled on it with our kids going to soccer and basketball and trips to California and trips to the White Mountains and trips to the Grand Canyon to Lake Powell. We went a lot of places with our family, and I just felt like, you know, it's probably time to go from the Expedition to something, you know, of course, newer, but something maybe a little bit smaller. So we're in an Explorer now. Got my wife into a pre-owned, certified, used Explorer. Made a lot of sense for us. And at Santan Ford, I went over to the dealership. JD showed me around. JD was terrific. You go there, you ask for JD. I mean, they're all great. JD helped me out from start to finish. The financing department, Big Kenny Leba, he helped me out. Tim Hovick, the general manager, was great through the whole process too. You know, Tim is involved in a lot here in the Arizona sports scene. He is the Santan Ford is the presenting sponsor for the ASU kickoff luncheon on Friday. Santan Ford is. Santan Ford is a big sponsor with the Diamondbacks. You see the big yellow and blue billboards right behind home plate. Santan Ford's a big part of the Arizona Cardinals. They just don't talk the game. They are invested in the sports scene. So if you're looking for that vehicle, whether it's like me with a certified pre-owned vehicle, the Explorer for my wife, the Fusion that I'm driving, why don't you stop in for yourself and do business with someone that is in or a group that's invested into what's going on here in Arizona. That's at Santan Ford. Santan Ford just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Michael Fabiano joins me on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. Plenty of content, high school, college, and pro on Sports360AZ.com. We've got video. We've got a recruiting roundup. You big college football fans, you just heard all that from Brad Edwards. We've got recruiting from Jared Cohen and Jason Jewell. Of course, just stories that we see a little bit different than everyone else. We appreciate our partnership with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat.
Giving you fantasy football insight you can't get anywhere else. With NFL Network and NFL.com fantasy expert Michael Fabiano, here's Brad Sussmat.
Michael Fabiano joins us, of course, every week. Michael Fabiano, senior fantasy analyst with the NFL Network and NFL.com. NFL Now. Make sure you get NFL Now. I'm sure you're ready for the regular season on one hand to get started, but on the other hand, we are now coming to week three of preseason. Drafts are now really ramping up. What are you seeing out there that you really like? A couple players on the board that maybe people aren't thinking about to get things started, Michael?
Well, there are a few players whose value is certainly now on the rise. Brandon Cooks is the first guy that comes to mind. He has been all the rave in Saints camp. He's looked good in preseason games. Now, I would tell people to temper their expectations because typically rookie wide receivers don't put up huge numbers, but the opportunity is going to be there. I'm not drafting him unless it's a sort of a borderline three or four. Right now he's coming off the board on NFL.com somewhere around the 14th round. I think now he's going to start moving up a little bit more, though, because of the hype and the way that he's been playing. So I would say watch this kid, but don't reach for him. What a lot of people do, unfortunately, in fantasy is they hear about a guy and he's great, and maybe he's unproven, but all of a sudden everyone jumps on board. You can't reach for some of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Another player whose value is rising a little bit, Tony Romo, came back, looked pretty good for the Cowboys, didn't show any ill effects from the back surgery, and he's a guy that if you like to wait on quarterbacks like I do, he can be had somewhere between the 9th and 11th round, and he could end up being your number one quarterback for the season. Another guy whose value is rising, at least in my opinion, Giovanni Bernard. He has seen all of the first team snaps during preseason for the Cincinnati Bengals, so it looks like he's the guy there. He will lose some looks to Jeremy Hill, but overall, Gio is going to be the guy that is going to see most of the backfield touches there in Cincinnati.
Getting a lot of questions on Twitter and just in my inbox about strategy involving Josh Gordon. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, honestly, Brad, you can't draft him until the later rounds because he's going to be suspended for some period of time,
mm-hmm.
whether it's 4 games, 8 games, or an entire season. And you can't go into a draft not knowing if you're going to have a guy for an entire season and use one of your first, say, 8 picks on him if you're in a typical 15-round draft. Because if all of a sudden he's gone for the whole year, you just wasted a pick. So it's a late-round flyer sort of situation. If he gets 8 games, well, then it'll be worth it. If he gets 12, obviously you're just going to put him back on the waiver wire. But despite the fact that he was so good last year, until we really know something concrete about what the suspension is, I just can't waste a pick on him until the late rounds.
Okay, and then that's the strategy question. How late do you wait on Josh Gordon?
Yeah, it's got to be until the later rounds.
Now let's go right to the mailbag then. For Michael Fabiano, the senior fantasy analyst, NFL Network, NFL.com, and of course, Hall of Famer with Brad Sussmat every week. Robert, in a PPR 10-team league, where would you draft Le'Veon Bell?
He's going to come off the board in one of the first 2 rounds. A good pass catcher. Last year was the top 20 running back in fantasy, and he only played in 13 games. And I know there's talk that LeGarrette Blount's going to steal short yardage and some goal line, but I still think Bell is going to be mostly featured in that backfield. So end of the first round, beginning of the second round for Le'Veon Bell.
Jeff, have the 7th pick in a 12-team PPR. Who would you target in the first 2 rounds? I'm thinking both Denver Thomases.
Both Denver Thomases. Wow. See, taking Julius Thomas is something I wouldn't do until probably the 4th or 5th round. I'm not taking a tight end unless his name is Jimmy Graham in one of the first 2 rounds. In a PPR league, actually in a standard league too, I always try to go running back, wide receiver in some order in my first 2 picks. So if you're 7th overall, I'm going to guess Calvin Johnson's probably gone. Jimmy Graham could potentially be there. And Jimmy Graham is basically like a wide receiver from a fantasy perspective. So it depends on best player available. Best running back available, best wide receiver available, or Jimmy Graham. Those will be your picks in the first couple of rounds.
Adrian, how will Doug Martin do this season?
Well, remember, the Buccaneers have now lost Charles Sims. It looks like he's gone for most of, if not the entire season. So that is going to free up some potential touches for Doug Martin. I don't expect him to be the stud he was as a rookie, but I don't expect him to be the bust that he was in his sophomore season. I see him as a second-round pick, a high-end RB2 type, who, again, should see more touches with Charles Sims out of the mix. Remember, Jeff Tedford, as much running back success as he had in college, he typically liked to use one featured back, but he ran the ball so much that a lot of times two guys had a bunch of carries and a bunch of touches. I think Martin leads that group.
You bring up something interesting there with Jeff Tedford. How much do you look at coordinators this time of year?
Oh, absolutely. The presence of North Turner in Minnesota is huge in fantasy, not only for Kyle Rudolph and Adrian Peterson, but for Cordero Patterson. You've got to look at that. Even his coaches, too. Hugh Jackson in Cincinnati, right? They're going to run the ball. Hugh Jackson likes to run the football. Hugh Jackson is the only coordinator that Darren McFadden ever had a big monster season under. You got to remember that. It's extremely important. You look at the situation in Dallas with Scott Linehan. Listen, Linehan threw the ball a ton in Detroit with Matthew Stafford. Linehan has coached Calvin Johnson, Torrey Holt, Randy Moss. Now he's got Dez Bryant. You've got to look at that stuff, Brad. It's important.
Michael Fabiano, great stuff there. Senior fantasy analyst, NFL Network, NFL.com. Check out NFL Now, the Hall of Famer with us. A couple other mailbag questions.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher, Dynasty League with two starting QBs. Stafford is one, the other Flacco or Manziel?
Wow. Well, it's a Dynasty League. I'm going Manziel because of the long-term potential, the long-term upside. Joe Flacco, I really think he's hit his statistical ceiling. In Dynasty League, you got to look long-term, and long-term, Manziel's the play.
Buzz, I have the eighth pick in a 12-team PPR league. Who should I be targeting on my first two picks?
Again, it's going to be running back and wide receiver. So depending on best player available, I don't think Calvin Johnson is going to fall to there. Jimmy Graham's probably going to be gone too. So in the first round, you could be looking at someone, for example, like Marshawn Lynch or DeMarco Murray. In the second round, you're going to want to target a wide receiver. So you're looking at potentially, if Calvin and Demaryius Thomas, they are off the board, you're looking at Dez Bryant. You're looking at AJ Green, Brandon Marshall, Julio Jones, guys like that. Running back and wide receiver in some order in the first two rounds. Of course, unless Jimmy Graham is there at the end of that first round, then you can grab him as well.
Gordon, is Kaepernick ready to be a top five fantasy producer?
No. I don't know that he ever will be a top five fantasy producer, but it doesn't mean he's going to be complete bust. I have him currently right outside of the top 10. At number 11, the Niners offense has looked, well, the Niners have looked awful so far in the preseason, but I'm not going to take too much stock in it. It's the preseason after all. But top five is a little too rich for my blood. I would say he's more of someone between 8 and 12. Definitely a QB1, though, and definitely someone who can be a part of a draft strategy that involves waiting on a quarterback.
Last question from the mailbag. David, picking out 11 and 13, who would you take? Gronk, Le'Veon Bell, Bernard, or Monte Ball?
Gronk is too early for that. It's really too early to take Gronkowski in the first or second round, at least in my opinion. So I'm going Monte Ball. I really like his potential in this Denver offense, and I know there's risk. But to be quite honest with you, Brad, there's risk in a lot of running backs, okay? So if you want to avoid that risk, well, then you take a safer player. Maybe you take a wide receiver. Gronk has got plenty of risk himself. Ball gives you the most upside because of the fact that Peyton Manning is the quarterback on that team, and because of the fact that running backs who have been the leading rushers in Peyton Manning offenses have averaged over 1,500 scrimmage yards and double-digit touchdowns every single year. Giovanni Bernard's got a pretty high ceiling as well, but he was a top 15 running back last year. Bell wasn't even on the board, so the upside there, the ceiling there is pretty big.
Last question. You mentioned Cooks and Romo earlier. Mm-hmm. Teams this weekend, this third weekend that supposedly is a better barometer, the teams you're going to look at this weekend, who are
they? Oh, are you kidding me? All of them. If you look at all of them, man. Trent Richardson, he hasn't looked good so far. So you want to see if he can turn it around. C.J. Spiller. I'm going to be particularly watching guys who are either struggling so far or coming off of injuries. So does Arian Foster play this week? That could be something that you really need to look out for because we haven't seen him yet. Mm-hmm. And players who have some upside, like a Bishop Sankey, for example, how does he look this week? Your Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning's of the world, your Adrian Peterson, he's not going to play in the preseason anyway, but LeSean McCoy, like, you know what you're getting with those guys. Mostly you want to look at players who are going to either be great draft bargains based on struggling last year or the fact that they're coming off of injuries, or younger guys to sort of see where they fit into the scope of their team's offenses.
Let you go off that. Appreciate your time and insight as always, Michael. Thanks.
All right, my friend. Always a pleasure.
You too. Michael Fabiano, senior fantasy analyst, NFL Network, NFL.com, the Hall of Famer, and you can check out more content on NFL Now. Brad Susmat, Sports360AZ.com. That is our site. We do a lot of fantasy work with Michael every week. It's always great to catch up with Michael Fabiano. Things that we see around Arizona sports, we're Arizona-centric. And we'll be back with more after this time out on a busy Wednesday.